Welcome to the Jock X Podcast, episode 55. My name is Jock, your host, and this is where each week I invite on amazing guests to discover their tips, their tools, their strategies, the principles that they live by that got them their incredible results. And us as listeners can grab a hold of these tools, grab a hold of these strategies, apply them to our own games, whether that be in sport, whether that be in business, or just in life in general, and take us to the next level. And that's what we're all about here. And this episode, number 55, I have on the CEO of Soldieron, John Bale, which is exciting because it follows up on my episode with Alan Sparks, which was number 53, and my chase for 10,000 downloads, which it didn't quite reach, but weren't too far away. And John here discusses Soldieron and how he co-founded that back a few years ago after spending time as an army officer in the Australian Defence Force, and really go in depth about how it all came about and why the importance of it is, and helping veterans, you know, reintegrate into civilian life and really looking after them who have served our country here in Australia so well. So this is an exciting episode, and I know you'll get a lot out of it and enjoy the story behind it all. Show notes for this is going to be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/EP55. But thank you for the shares. Thank you for telling your mates, telling your family, emailing it to whoever it is. It really helps us out, and that's what it's for. It's for free. It's for you guys to take your games up a notch. And I hope you are thoroughly enjoying it each week. So without further ado, we're going to get stuck straight into this episode, number 55, with myself, Jock, and John Bale. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks, Gary.
It's fantastic to have you here, and we can really dive straight into and discuss as CEO of Soldieron and your involvement. I'd love to sort of start off with some of the key reasons that launched this charity a few years ago, and what its, you know, what its key functionalities are today.
So we started off in 2012, but I guess the story goes back a few years before that, to 2008 on the 27th of November. A really good mate of mine, Michael Fussell, was killed that night in an IED in Afghanistan, in Uruzgan province, and that was obviously a fundamental thing for myself and for all my other mates and for those that were in his class at Duntroon and Adra, and it really shocked us because there hadn't been an officer killed in operations for a very long time, and we all thought we were young, bulletproof, nothing was going to affect us. But it really did shock us, and I think brought home the realities of going to war. The other thing that shocked me and my wife was that the support that existed for his family was just incredible. The family was given so much care and consideration by the Armidale community, where I went to school and he went to school opposite and we joined up from, but also the wider army community and defence community. But what didn't happen is there was, or what existed as a gap was there was no real organisation to support those that were wounded in the same incident. So this IED unfortunately caused physical injuries to others in that incident, and obviously the way in which Fuss was killed resulted in some psychological scars for those that were there on that night. But firstly, no one really knew their names or knew how to support them inside defence, and unfortunately when they get out of defence, and there was no way that the average Australian could support them in their recovery. And what we'd seen overseas with Help for Heroes and with the Warrior Project and other organisations is that the community can be and should be a part of that recovery process, because ultimately, as long as you are in the Defence Force, there's one assurity, and that is that you will get out of it one day. And once you get out, you're back in the community, and if the community doesn't understand what you've been through and can't support you in your times of hardship, then it's going to be a lot harder when you get out for not just you, but also your family. And the other reason, I guess, big reason for me personally, why we set this up was in 2011 and 2012, I was posted to headquarters to join Operation Command, which I guess the simplest way to explain what that unit does is it looks after all the ADF, Australian Defence Forces, force components around Australia that are on operations. So from border protection to in the Sinai, at that time in Afghanistan and Solomon Island and East Timor, Timor-Leste, etc. So a very operationally focused organisation. What I saw there, because I was on shift, was seeing the guys in contact in Afghanistan constantly, seeing so many boats at that time coming in from Indonesia with suspected illegal immigration. And the toll that was having on guys, you could see coming through the reports that this is the third time that this unit had been in contact in that week. They had this many wounded, unfortunately had this many killed, but it just wasn't transitioning and translating to the outside media and to the outside world. And I think we were starting to get to a point in Afghanistan where a whole war was happening and the Australian people had no real insight into that. Fast forward to now, and unfortunately fast forward a couple of years, that means you've got a lot of veterans who are coming out of the Defence Force with a really limited understanding of the outside world, but also the community, the Australian community, has a really limited understanding of what they've been through, which doesn't really set them up for success in whatever it is that they choose to do. So with my wife and a good mate, we decided we're going to do something about this. And we just started off really small, focusing on really trying to build some awareness and highlighting that just because someone had been wounded, well, firstly highlighting that there actually was people getting wounded overseas. It just wasn't those that my mate who were killed in action, but there's others who were getting physical wounds, but especially psychological wounds, which is something that wasn't really discussed before soldiers on, to be honest. Highlighting that we as a community actually had the ability to support them, but it wasn't just government's responsibility. Yes, they have a fundamental duty of care, but us as a community, we also have a really important role to play. And I guess this is the part where Danny, my wife, really brought her expertise as a psychologist, is I, to be honest, started very much focused on the physical wounds. We started to realise, and through her background, the psychological wounds are really going to be, unfortunately, the area where we will see as many people through the organisation as more like 10 times the number of physically wounded. So that's really an organisation where we need to place a lot of our focus. So with that in mind, we decided we'd do something quite small and kick the organisation off. And we started in April 24, 2012, so almost 4 years old, and grew it from there to this point now. And through that transition, we've gone from really building awareness. So we had two guys go to the South Pole with Prince Harry back in 2013 in partnership with Walking with the Wounded, a UK charity, through to now when we've got centres here in Canberra, Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, Perth, and a partnership on the Gold Coast. And our focus there is now more about holistic support, service delivery, what we call reintegration officers that go out and support people. And for us, it's built around three broad tenets of focus on the individual and the family, and that is your well-being, so that whole physical and psychological well-being, and providing a number of programs around supporting that, your community and family, and building that social connectedness through simple things such as coffee catch-ups, yoga, learn-to programs, and connecting people together through social media as well. And then the big one that we're moving into is your future, and that's about providing opportunities for employment and education so that people, once they've really secured that grounding of getting physical and psychological support and then building social connectedness, can go on to have careers outside of the defence that are truly empowering, which means that hopefully many of the issues that we've seen in last generation and the generation before of veterans, where they get out and don't necessarily move into jobs that are fitting, don't exist for this generation. So it's been a big growth, been an incredible journey, and we're at a point now where we're really supporting a lot of veterans, and it's a real privilege to be doing this on behalf of the community.
Yeah, it's been fantastic, and obviously having Alan on the podcast prior to this was, fascinating to
get a look inside to people who, you know, obviously he's in the police force, but people who do suffer from the mental trauma of these things, and he talked right in depth about his challenges he's had. Are there other charity organisations like yours that you base yourself off, or is there like a market leader, if you like, in other nations that do it really well and look after the soldiers really well?
Yeah, absolutely. And first, we're really, really lucky to have Al on board as an ambassador. He's an incredible guy. And what we've recognised through his story, and also through a lot of other people we've worked with, especially veterans who get out into the emergency services, is that they also have a fundamental relationship with PTSD, depression, anxiety from their work. And what we've just started to pilot, actually, that's not true, it feels like just started, we're about 6 months into it, is a pilot here in the ACT of supporting emergency services down here. There are a lot of similarities between the ADF and emergency services. They're not the same, but the outcome is often the same, and that is PTSD, anxiety, depression, the families not being supported the way they could or should be. So we're working on how, as an organisation, we can support them as well, looking into that around the country. So having someone like Al who's been through it and now gets out and helps motivate and support others, it's just absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah.
On the other side, I guess a market leader, we modelled ourselves very, very heavily on Help for Heroes. So they're a UK charity started in 2008 by Bryn and Emma Perry. Again, it was about connecting the community to an outcome. And they started with a simple process of trying to build a pool because the guys at Headley Court, which is a centre of excellence over there for veterans who are wounded, they happened to go to the local pool. So you've got amputees and guys not in a very good state happened to go to the local pool and kind of being, I guess, being in a fishbowl, if you will, while they're recovering. And they thought that's not the right thing, and so they said, let's do something about it. And next thing, the community just basically fired up and supported them in a massive way, and suddenly they realised that the community wanted to do something. The defence highlighted a number of gaps that existed, and it went from there. Now, we've got a different situation here in Australia, insofar as the gaps that existed were different. But again, there was a lack of the ability for the community to connect to veterans affected by the service and their families. And I think that's the two things that we've joined. So like them, we've now got centres through most of the southern parts of the country at this point, and really looking at their model about being positive, trying to highlight the positivity around getting veterans supported and just making the community part of that support that it can't. Government cannot do what we're doing. They shouldn't be doing what we're doing. Supporting and working with large companies, they've got probity issues. Trying to build social connectedness, governments don't do that very well. It's not what they do. They're not in that space. So that was the big driving force in seeing that. And really inspirational the way they've done it. And pretty much grabbed as much as we could from them and looked around the world and looked at other organisations that were similar, grabbed what we could from them. And then made it Australian, and it's been great to see the community support to this point. It's been absolutely phenomenal.
With your collaborations, you've really connected with some really amazing ambassadors you got for your organisation, and you know, obviously other events and so forth. What do you think has made your charity, I guess, be so successful in a short period of time, and really, you know, gathering momentum as the years tick on?
I think it was because there is this underlying, and there is an underlying respect for serving men and women in Australia. if you go back a couple of years, post-Vietnam, that didn't exist. A lot of people targeted the veteran as part of the politics. That has changed. We've learned that lesson, and now we can separate that too. You may not support Afghanistan, you may not support Iraq, but you will support the veteran. So there was a community that wanted to support the veteran, but there was no way of achieving that. And what we did is we started at the grassroots, so you know, for us it was a couple of hundred bucks, a good idea, and really started out low. But we also recognise and use some of those skills that we'd learn in the defence force to go, well, how are we going to achieve this? And we recognise that a couple of young guys, there's no way that we were going to cut it, as in so far as getting the likes of John Howard on board with us. So what we'd recognise also is we need to have a board of people who have really significant governance experience and can connect them right away. So in getting Lieutenant General Pedelet on board, who's our founding chairman, it was phenomenal to have his name behind the organisation and then subsequently others. And it was very easy, once he was on board, to get the likes of John Howard and, you know, Van Armitage and all those guys that were there on Monday night for one of our activities recently, on board with us. And that really, I think, set that up because it made it something that the community could be a part of. But the other part, and I go back to the point I made earlier, is we were trying to make a positive conversation. It can be very, very easy to be negative about so many things in the social sector. We could put up images of guys being, you know, coming home having been blown up and really push it on people that it's their responsibility to help them. But I don't think that would cut much sway. There's a lot of negativity in the world. What we're trying to highlight is that you can make a positive difference for these veterans, and that they, in turn, once they're at the end of their recovery, can actually go back in the community and continue to serve and serve the community the way they did in the ADF, but just without a uniform. So I think for us it's that constant message of positivity and being able to recognise that as a part of the community I can be fundamentally involved in a change that's giving people a positive outlook on their life, but in general we're making a massive change for veterans.
Yeah, for sure. John, I actually like to discuss your own journey in a way. Now, just from my research on you, you had your great-grandfather went to World War One. Is that correct?
Yep.
And then your grandfather went to World War Two, and your father went to Vietnam?
Yes.
So in terms of yourself, it was a sort of a thing you always grew up with in wanting to get involved, as you know, in being a part of the Defence Force for Australia?
Yeah, look, it was, and to flesh that out a bit, my great-grandfather was actually wounded 100 years ago this year at Tremels, which is our the Australian Army's and the Australian Defence Force's worst day and worst military, basically, catastrophe we've ever had, which I think was 5,533 casualties in a day, and unfortunately he was one of those, so he was wounded on that day, but that then passed on to my grandfather, who went to Singapore and was there for the fall of Singapore and became a prisoner of war at Changi, and my dad was at the Battle of Coral in Vietnam. So I was very lucky in my deployment to have very much skipped all of that, and I was not involved in anything at all, so I was very, very, very lucky. So I guess looking at that history, probably asked, well, why would I join up? I guess for me, I wanted to be a part of something bigger than myself, and as much as my family had been through some pretty incredibly traumatic events, didn't speak about that. They spoke about the mateship, the camaraderie, the way it defines you as a person, where it's not you, if that makes sense. It's more around your contribution as part of a wider thing, and whether that be in a war, which is, you know, I guess the context where my ancestors are gone, it's about being something more than simply yourself. It's about that sense of purpose, belonging, but doing it in such a way that you're able to be a part of a professional organisation. And I guess I decided that was for me. Looking back now at that, and seeing what I've seen through Soldier On and everything we do, a very different view, I think, joining the military now as to then. Because at that age, you don't really ask those questions about, well, how did you feel going to Vietnam and being in a major conflict, losing your mates, being wounded? You know, how did that make you feel? you just don't talk about those kind of things. So I think now looking back, you realise that I'm very proud of my family's heritage and history, but it's also a heritage of pain. You don't come back the same from what my predecessors went to, I should say ancestors went to. You are different. For me, my deployment opportunities were positive, but for them, they do come back different, and I think that's one of the considerations I've realised is joining up, you are part of a team, you are able to make change, but when we as a country turn people off the conflict, there are consequences, and for some people they'll be positive, for the vast majority they'll be in some way positive, but there will be negative elements to that, and we have to be aware of that and have to realise that we also have to be there for them when they get back.
If you had to give advice to someone who is thinking about joining the Defence Force or even joining maybe emergency services or the police force, what would your advice be in regards to taking care of your well-being and health throughout that time you spent with the Defence Force or so? And once you retire, what are some of the key things you would advise people to do?
I think one of the biggest things is you really do sacrifice yourself in those professions for others, especially when you're in a leadership position, and most people, once they've been in those organisations for some time, are put into a leadership position. But I think the biggest thing is to focus on your ability to remain and be resilient, and a lot of that comes down to recognising symptoms, recognising in yourself, recognising in the people that you lead, the men and women, that it's not all 100% about the mission. It is insofar as achieving it, but you won't achieve it in a way that allows your team to continue to grow if you don't recognise the softer side of, I guess, that leadership, but also the person. So what I'm trying to say is you need to look after the well-being, and that well-being can't simply be, you know, here's a paycheck or let's have an EKO on a Friday. It has to be looking at how your people are tracking, what they've been through, how it's affecting them, and having a couple of those conversations around, you know, emotions and the things that, to be honest, still, especially for my sex, blokes don't like talking about, and actually having those conversations in a constructive way. It's not just a, you know, how do you feel, it's more of a, how do we feel about that? How do we feel we can improve, and how do we feel that can build our resilience as a team, as part of an organisation to continue on? And obviously, to achieve all that, if you're going to be a leader, as I said at the start, you most likely will be if you stay for long enough. The big question is, how do you do that for yourself? And I think, for me, that's something that I didn't really learn. And to be honest, a lot of the people they're saying, you don't learn that. You don't learn really how to look after yourself, how to manage the stress, how to manage the traumatic instances that many times you've been through, and you don't learn necessarily how to manage it in others. So I think that's one of the big things, is looking at that. What are your values? How do they hint to certain days in the job, which can be very challenging? How do you look after the health and well-being of your team while still being able to achieve the mission and getting the end state?
Yeah, I think that's some really good points there. John, just like a final few questions that I ask each guest that comes on the show. When I say successful, who do you think of and why?
Very inspired by Peter Lay, so General Peter Lay, who's my chair. He's former Chief of Army, one of the longest serving, or second longest serving Chief of Army in the Act history. A huge amount of food off the inside of the Defence Force and now external to it. And the way he approaches things, his level-headedness, the way he thinks through things, and really able to, at all levels, from top of government right back when he was taking the army through to a private soldier. The way he talks, it makes you feel like you listen to, and it makes you feel like you've got something to contribute. And I think that's really an amazing thing to see that from someone who has had such an incredible career. And it's a really wonderful thing that I think can be an inspiration for others that are coming through the ranks at the moment, to highlight that you can have and be a leader without having to be harsh and I guess wall off the emotions and those kind of things, that you can be an inspirational leader in the military, and there are so many there. But you can also be that in the outside world once you've gone from the military. In different sense, you change somewhat for the civilian community once you've got out of the military, but a big inspiration in that way. And it's been wonderful to be able to work with him closely through this process since we started back in 2012. And I know I've grown a lot through the process, and being able to be mentored by someone like that, it's a true privilege.
Yeah, fantastic. What advice would you have for your 25-year-old self?
We didn't start this much after I was 25, so probably to do exactly what we did insofar as think it was going to be easy and maintain that positivity and naivety, I think, of the 25-year-old, that is, you can do things. I think, for me, I wish I told my 25-year-old self and maybe a couple of years previously that the ideas I had and the ideas that have been developed by me with others, etc., they're actually valuable. I was quite grey inside the Defence Force. I didn't put my hand up often. I didn't, push across my point. I was pretty quiet. And a lot of the time I was sitting there thinking about things, and I just felt that people would judge what I had to say or something like that when I was younger in the Defence Force. I started to get out of it by the time I was about 25, but I think it's a little bit to do with self-confidence, but it's a lot to do with caring what others think, and started to realise it actually doesn't matter what others think about you. That has nothing to do with your... that shouldn't anyway have anything to do with how you approach the world. I thought being a 28-year-old talking to a bunch of generals and politicians, etc., about ideas that they had been struggling with and working on for many years, that all just think I was an idiot, go away, young snapper, we've got this covered. But I put that aside and said, okay, I don't actually care what they think about me. Here's the ideas, here's what I think, here's the evidence for it. Let's see if this works, let's just have the conversation. And if they don't think it does, then that's fine, that's their opinion. It's not going to affect me, because I actually don't care what they think. Instead, I'd rather what they think about the idea. And I think often you go through life too worried that others think, without actually looking at the thing you're presenting or the idea. It's more about that, and the credit to you is more about the idea, the consequence of if it's put into action, how it could help other people, versus the other side of it's about you. This soldier is not about me, it's not about Danny, it's not about Karen. It's about the idea that we put forward, and the fact that we're speaking on veterans and families' behalf to the wider community. And that's what I think is an important thing. I think we're very self-absorbed sometimes, and the quicker you get out of that self-focus, constant self-focus, I think you can really help and do so much more. And that's something I've recently went back to Duntroon and spoke to. So Royal Military College, where they educate young officers before they go out into their units and take up their first command. I went back and had the honour of being the keynote there, and it's actually third year in a row that I've done it. I went back there, and that was the genesis of that, the focus of that speech and the one previously is, while you're here, don't think that people are looking at even kind of ticking and flicking to see if you're going to make it or not, because if you do, you'll be so guarded and self it's all focused, that you probably won't be able to do the thing that you want to do. Focus on what it is that you're there for. Focus on the idea. And you know what? If that doesn't work for you, then maybe that's not what you should be doing. If talking about an idea and presenting it in the way that you feel passionate about, if that isn't being picked up, then maybe the idea is not that great. But that doesn't mean you're not great. I think that's a big delineation that you often struggle with. It's something I struggle with. And as soon as you can get past that, it really does unlock a huge amount of potential in yourself. And the other thing I'd say to my 25-year-old self is go and help others. Because to be honest, before that, I did some community work in touch. But again, it was more about my life and what I was doing, instead of being about others. And I think as soon as you, again, not about yourself, you're about helping others, the potential you unlock is fundamental. So many things exist in you that you don't know about, and also you become passionate. And sort of recently to a lot of people, you can't fake passion. It's one of the things that when you have it, you cut through in conversations, you can motivate, you can inspire people that otherwise you would just never have a chance of motivating or inspiring. So there you go, it's a fair bit of advice probably.
No.
It wasn't that long ago, but it's been a very, very quick journey and incredibly steep learning curve. I've learned a huge amount over the last 4 years, not just from a community perspective, but also the business of setting up an organisation. We're the only organisation that's set up independent in this space, and we've gone from, you know, a couple hundred bucks and three people with a great idea to, you know, a considerably large organisation that's doing a lot of amazing work, and that's not always easy. And the buck stops, at the top, and it can be quite challenging. So it's been an incredible learning curve, but one that I would say to anyone, it's an amazing opportunity to have a crack at.
Yeah, fantastic. Final couple of questions. What are you grateful for in your life right now?
My family. I have an incredible wife, two amazing kids, and for me that's just everything to me. My family means the world to me. I think without them, I don't know where I'd be. The ability to have someone who it's truly my soulmate, which is my wife. It really does unlock a huge amount of potential again in you, and to be able to talk about anything and everything to someone and to truly share your life with someone is just absolutely incredible. My kids are really full on. They are amazing little people, and it really, again, it levels you. You're out talking to prime ministers or whatever one day, and the next day you're cleaning up vomit and you're out in the sand getting rough house with two kids. So it's just amazing, and for me that's the biggest thing I'm thankful for, is family. It really, you can't replace it, this has been all encompassing soldier on over the last few years obviously, but that's something I've really pushed back on, making sure I make space for family, because you only get one, you only get what you've got right now, and can't miss that. Those years just go by really, really quickly, and it's been wonderful to see them grow up. They're only a little still, but that's really what I'm thankful for.
Fantastic. Final question: if I could give you a banner and you could place it anywhere in the world, where would it be, and what would it say?
It would be on the shores of Gallipoli, and it would say, remember those that went 100 years before for those that live today.
Fantastic.
And the reason it is Gallipoli is because, for me, as much as we're in the centenary of Anzac this year, which is a focus on the Western Front, as I said, with Cremel and Pozieres, the two largest battles for this year, both of which were fundamental disasters, most Australians won't connect the dots with that. Most Australians, they and the whole national narrative in many instances go back to Gallipoli. And I think it's really fundamentally important to connect the history of, again, what was another unfortunate military disaster, but one that cemented a sense of national identity for us, making sure that today we best commemorate that and the continuation of that service and sacrifice with today's service and sacrifice. And the community, like they did then, support those that continue to return.
Fantastic. I think that's a great way to wrap up our conversation here, John. I just want to acknowledge you for giving your time to come on the show. I think you're doing absolutely amazing work, and there's so many people, obviously particular people who have finished up in the Defence Force, Emergency Services, are really benefiting from your work. So I really want to acknowledge you for that, and I'm excited for the things in the future that you're going to achieve and really help so many. So thank you very much for coming on the show.
Absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Fantastic, mate. We'll catch up soon.
Perfect. Thank you. Cheers.
No worries. Fantastic, mate. Well, that was great.
Done. Happy with that. Hopefully I didn't go too long.
That was just great. Yeah, that was good. That would be fantastic. I'll do an intro and an outro later, so I'll sort of introduce who you are and what you do, and we'll be able to get straight into that conversation, which would be fantastic. I just actually had another thing, John, just here. I've just been in contact with a radio station down here, Gold FM, which Anthony Limo.
Limo, yeah.
Yeah, he hosts. I'm in contact with their producer. They're after a female ex-service, someone who's been overseas and has a family. They're after someone, like, sort of look at it from the female perspective. Would you know of any particular female soldier who's been overseas that has a family that, you know, can discuss their experiences? And I think they were looking at doing a segment next week or on Anzac Day.
Okay, I will go and have a look. I'll have a chat to our comms peaks and see if we've got anyone who's available to have a chat. But yeah, no, I'd be delighted to, because I think that's a big thing, is most people look at most people look at veterans. And they think, oh, yeah, male, this age, mostly 40, 50 is the youngest they think, whereas that's not the case. So I'll have a look.
Fantastic, mate. Yeah, that'd be great. I just literally got an email this morning and I want to help them out, and I think obviously it'd be great to tie it in with your organisation, which would be great, and they sort of know what we did here with Alan, and then, but they also wanted to go down the path of, yeah, a female ex-veteran and go from that sort of way.
Oh, easy.
Nice.
Pleasure.
No dramas, John. Well, yeah, I think Dion there has my email, shoot me through and I can pass it on, or if you want to contact him directly, that's fine, but I can link him up, and I'll let you know with this episode, though. I should be releasing it in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine, and I'll let you know.
So, easy. I'll go and have a chat to Dion now and see if we can get someone. If not, we'll also tell you, because we're not sure at the moment if he's got someone, but we'll have a look.
Yeah, that's fine. That's fine. No drama. If you don't, that's fine. But I'll let them know either way.
Perfect. I really appreciate your time and pleasure talking. Really hope you hit the 10,000 with Al's podcast.
Yeah, fantastic. And I'll hopefully, yeah, that'd be great. We'll have a good day out on Monday if I do. So we'll, fingers crossed, we'll keep watching those numbers come in.
Perfect. All right. Cheers, mate.
No worries. Bye-bye. So there you have it, folks. Episode 55 with John Bale from Soldier On. Hope you really enjoyed that one. Obviously, for episode 53 with Alan Sparks, we didn't quite reach 10,000 downloads, but we weren't too far away. And maybe next year I might have to line up and do something equally as crazy, and you guys will have to get on board and get downloading for that episode. But we'll see how we go there. Show notes for this episode will be on eliteteamleadership.com.au/EP55. Also, guys, thank you so much for the shares. If you can give the podcast a rating and a review, a 5-star rating really helps us out with to continue to have these guests through the door. So if you jump on iTunes, do that. It takes about 90 seconds. But also, guys, I just hope you have a massive week.
next week, got on a huge guest, which I'm super excited about. You're definitely going to have to keep your eyes and ears ready for that one. But other than that, guys, get stuck in, have a massive week, and I hope to catch up with you at some point. Cheers.